Welcome to Chapter 21, The Perfect Participles. And this is a perfect chapter because it's our last chapter on the participles. It's all downhill from here. We've looked at the present participle, the aorist participle, and now the perfect participles. Because this chapter will go rather quickly, now that we kind of understand the various usages of the participle, learning the forms is not such a difficult task. We'll also include here some notes on the periphrastics and the genitive absolute. So we'll throw in some odds and ends that fit perfectly here, and then we'll be down the road. So let's jump in. I'd like to begin with chanting the participle chants that we know so far. The present active participle forms, say them with me.
Luon, luontos, luousa, luouses, luon, luontos.
And once again on the present active participle forms.
Luon, luontos, luousa, luouses, luon, luontos.
And now the first aorist active.
Lusas, lusantos, lusasa, lusases, lusan, lusantos.
And one more time on the first aorist active.
Lusas, lusantos, lusasa, lusases, lusan, lusantos.
Not bad. And let's finish up with the first aorist passive chant.
Luthes, luthentos, luthesa, luthesis, luthen, luthentos.
And one more time.
Luthes, luthentos, luthesa, luthesis, luthen, luthentos.
Well, we just got to add the perfects and we have it down. Now, in the perfect participles, let's begin with looking at the translation options for the perfect participles. Generally, the perfect is completed action with present results, generally, but we've noticed that the participle is not a perfect fit with the patterns that we've learned like this. And the participle certainly detaches itself from any direct time connection. The adverbial translation will be something like this, after having driven. That's an antecedent action, or sometimes it may be simultaneous, like while having driven. Sometimes causal, because of, sometimes instrumental, by, and concessive, something like even though having driven, etc. So the adverbial taking the where, the when, the why of the verb, and modifying the verb, just almost like an adverb would, fits also here for the perfect participles. The adjectival attributive use will be the girl having spoken, or he who has come, something along those lines, where the little helper verb having and has are used as an auxiliary verb with the main verb. The substantive usage will be the one who has run, or the ones who have run, something along that line. So you'll have exactly the same categories of uses, the adverbial, the adjectival, the substantive, and also it will substitute sometimes for a verb in terms of the indicative verb or an imperatival use, as noted by Wallace in the last chapter. So these are the usages of the perfect participle, and now let's figure out how they're formed. All right, how do we form the perfect active participle? Well, in the present tense and aorist, we added the NT, or the nun tau. In the perfect, we're going to add an omicron tau. I like to think of it as the present and aorist are NT, New Testament, and the perfect is the OT, the Old Testament, or Omicron Tau. There's a reduplication in the front. Notice there's no augment on the participle, but a reduplication is not an augment. So there is a reduplication. The stem, lu, from luo. There's the perfect k. And then the participle insertion, omicron tau, with the third declension endings. So you have
leleukotos.
The active feminine takes the upsilon iota, and it will also be reduplicated, followed by the stem lu. The perfect k will appear to indicate it's perfect, and the participle insertion, upsilon iota, is added along with the first declension endings. So you have leleukeia. Now let's look at the paradigm to look at how this whole thing takes shape. For the perfect masculine form for the nominative using the third declension endings, you've got leleukos,
leleukotos, leleukoti, leleukota.
And so the endings we're familiar with, the reduplication and the perfect kappa, just make sure that we know that this is obviously a perfect. So this is a piece of cake. The feminine first declension is leleukeia, leleukeias, leleukeia, leleukeion. And so it uses the alpha all the way down, does not vacillate with the eta, but just alpha the whole way down for the first declension. And then the neuter forms back to the third declension endings. We have
leleukos, leleukotos, leleukoti, leleukos,
where the nominative and accusative are exactly the same. And oops, on the nominative and accusative, the tau got dropped out. When the sigma is added, the tau drops, so we have leleukas. And you've got to remember that little switch there. Notice also for the masculine nominative also, we have leleukos, which is a little bit odd as well. But we're used to seeing those nominatives in the participle being a little strange, especially in the masculine and neuter. How is this translated? Some examples. As an attributive adjective, she who has loosed. Or as a substantive, the one who has loosed. Or as a adverbial temporal use, after having loosed. Antecedent action. The plural forms are absolutely regular. Leleukates, for the masculine nominative plural, using the third declension endings.
Leleukotes, leleukoton, leleukosi, leleukotas.
And the feminine, using the regular first declension endings. Leleukeiae, leleukeion, leleukeiais, leleukeias. And the neuter, absolutely regular,
leleukota, leleukoton, leleukosi, leleukota.
Nominative and accusative, exactly the same. The genitive and dative matching from the neuter, matching the masculine forms exactly. Regularity is a good thing. Now you remember the perfect takes the middle passive, use the same form for the middle and the passive, just like the present tense participle. And so we've got the reduplication on the front, this followed by the stem, lu. The participle insertion now for the middle passive is men, like we've seen in the present and in the aorist. And then they take the 2-1-2 endings. So it's
lelumenos.
The feminine form takes the first declension ending, so it's lelumene. And then the neuter form, adding the second declension,
hieron,
endings, going to
lelumenon.
Now Now, some middle translation possibilities would be things like this. She has loosed for herself, in a beneficial kind of reading there, adjectivally. Or substantively, taking that beneficial usage, the one who has loosed for himself. Or after having loosed for herself, instead of being after, could also be because, causal, by, instrumental, or concessive, even though, in the adverbial usage. Now this middle, once again, can be translated actively, where you emphasize the participation of the subject in the action of the verb, or in this case, participle. We will generally translate these passive, but there are middle options here if we need to go that direction. So here are the perfect middle passive participle paradigms, the masculine, starting out with the nominative.
Lelumenos, lelumenu, lelumeno, lelumenon.
Just our
logos, logu, logo, logon.
Endings tagged on the second declension. There's clear. The feminine is the first declension, and it's lelumene, lelumenes, lelumene, lelumenane. Just our graphe, graphes, graphe, graphane endings there. And then over to the neuter, absolutely regular.
Lelumenon, lelumenu, lelumeno, lelumenon.
And the nominative accusative exactly the same. The genitive and dative in the neuter matching exactly the genitive and dative in the masculine. The passive translation options would be as an adjectival attributive use, she has been loosed. And as a substantive use, it'd be the one who has been loosed, where the action of the participle happens to the subject, the one who has been loosed. Taking it adverbially, in a temporal manner, after having been loosed, antecedent, if we took it simultaneous, it would be while having been loosed. Can also be instrumental, by, causal, because, or concessive, even though, and several other ways, as other adverbs have that flexibility as well. The perfect middle passive participles, the plural forms for the masculine are lelumenoi, lelumenon, lelumenois, lelumenus. Just the oi, on, ois, us endings from
logos,
our second declension. The feminine form, similarly, is lelumeni, lelumenon, lelumenais, lelumenas, our graphe forms. And the neuter from
hieron,
the endings lelumena, lelumenon, lelumenois, lelumena. The nominative accusative the same, the genitive and dative of the neuter matching the genitive and dative of the masculine. Now normally we'll translate these passively, and so here are some passive options for the translations taken adjectivally. She has been loosed. The one who has been loosed is the substantive, and after having been loosed, the adverbial, or could be by or because or even though it was concessive, adverbially. So generally we'll take them as passive, but sometimes they'll go middle, in which case they're translated actively sometimes, and also for the benefit of the actor, for himself, for herself. So these forms are pretty straightforward. Here's the chant for the perfect participle. We'll do the actives, and I simply want you to recognize the middle passives. Those forms are obvious. There's no need to memorize them. So the perfect active participle.
Lelukos, lelukotos, lelukia, lelukias, lelukos, lelukotos.
One more time.
Lelukos, lelukotos, lelukia, lelukias, lelukos, lelukotos.
And then the middle passive are
lelumenos,
lelumenu. lelumene, lelumenes,
lelumenon,
lelumenu. Again, we won't memorize those. Those are our
menos,
menu forms that we know from actually all our participles have those for the middle and the middle passive. Now, there are a few key examples of what are called second perfects. And three examples that you should be aware of because of their frequency are things like
ginomai,
I become. When it becomes a perfect participle, it's geganos,
geganotos, geganoti, geganota,
etc. I become as a perfect participle.
Erkomai,
always our bad boy, becomes in a perfect participle. Eleluthos,
eleluthotos, eleluthoti, eleluthota,
etc. And then a new one that's just actually works for the perfect, as we've seen before, oida is perfect, but it's translated as a present active. Oida, I know, becomes eidos,
eidotos, eidoti, eidota,
etc. for those forms. So just be aware of those, especially the oida going to
eidotos.
If you aren't aware of the shift from the epsilon iota back to the omicron iota, that's a toughie. So be aware that there are second perfect participles, and these three forms in particular, be aware of them. They will pop up as these verbs are all very frequent. Now, two additions to our perfect participle chapter are going to be the discussion of the periphrastics and the genitive absolute. Now first, what is a periphrastic? A periphrastic is when there's an auxiliary verb, a me, plus a participle, and the combination of the auxiliary verb a me and the participle are translated like a regular verb. And it pulls the person, number, and mood. We haven't done much with moods yet, but the subjunctive or imperative mood is pulled from the a me. So the a me tells you what person it is, whether it's first person, I am, you are, he, she, it is, the person and the number, they are, you plural, or we are, the number, is pulled from the a me. And the tense is pulled from the combination of the a me plus the following participle. Porter makes an interesting observation that in this periphrastic, how you can tell them is that there's no intervening words between the auxiliary verb, a me, and the participle, except ones that complete or modify the participle. So normally the a me and the participle will be back to back, except when there's this completion or modification of the participle by some sort of word, adjective, phrase, or something like that. So that's how you can tell a periphrastic. It'll be a me followed immediately by a participle, and they can be taken in various ways. And most of the moods and tenses of Greek can be aped by this periphrastic construction. So it's out there, it's fairly frequent, you need to be aware of it. And now that we know the participles, we can understand how it functions. And we're aware of this in English, even in how we do the future, for example. I will go to the store. The will is a kind of auxiliary verb that tells us it's a future with go. And so we use auxiliary verbs all the time in English. So this is not a big surprise. Greek also uses that kind of a format. Here's an example of the periphrastic.
Monon de akuontes eisan hoti.
But only
de monon.
They were hearing.
Akuontes
is our participle, present participle, coupled with eisan, the imperfect third person plural. So they were hearing. The they is pulled from the ekousan, third person plural. The hearing is pulled from the
akuontes.
And the resultant form is an approximation of an imperfect. They were hearing
hoti
that, and then goes on. So So that's what a periphrastic looks like and how it functions. Now, here is just a chart that basically lays out the different options for the various periphrastics and how they should be translated. The present tense is approximated by a present ame plus a present participle. So that's fairly easy. Two presents equal a present tense. The imperfect tense, which we've just seen, has an imperfect ame and a present participle. The future tense has a future ame plus a present participle. So basically you see that the present ame, the imperfect ame, and the future ame determines what it will come out when linked with the present participle. Now jumping to the perfect participle forms, we have a perfect tense approximation, and it's the present tense of ame plus a perfect participle. The pluperfect tense is approximated by the imperfect of ame and the perfect participle. And the future perfect, which is rare, is approximated by a future of ame plus the perfect. So the perfect participle is linked with the present ame for perfect, imperfect, and future, and that tells whether it's perfect, pluperfect, or future perfect. And there can also be mood changes to subjunctives and imperatives using the ame to trigger the shift over to a different mood. And those also function periphrastically when we get to the moods. But we aren't too moody right now. Notice the lack of the aorist participle in these forms. Largely takes the present and the perfect to participles. The aorist takes care of itself in other ways. Now on to the genitive absolute. The genitive absolute is a participle and a noun or pronoun that are both found in the genitive that are not connected to the rest of the sentence. They're absolute or absolutely independent of the rest of the sentence. And so the noun that goes with the participle, both in the genitive form, will usually be taken as the subject of that participle. Then the participle of the genitive absolute should often be read adverbially, and a lot of times temporally type, either with a while or after, and then the participle that we've seen with the adverbial participles. So that's how the genitive absolute functions. The genitive noun or pronoun is its subject, and it's translated usually adverbially and oftentimes temporally with a while or after. Now, Stevens notes in his excellent grammar that oftentimes these genitive absolutes indicate a major shift in person. So in other words, there may be using the first person or third person singular, he, and then all of a sudden they want to include some other people, so they go jump to a they in a different group than what's being talked about, and they'll use a genitive absolute that's absolutely independent from the rest of the syntax of the sentence to note that major shift in persons in the narrative. And that's some helpful information to trigger our understanding of the genitive absolute. Absolutely. Here's an example of a genitive absolute. Tu de
Jesu genomenu
en Bethania en oikia
Simonos
tu lepru proselthen auto gune. And then the first part, the
Jesu genomenu,
is our genitive absolute. But while Jesus was in Bethany, Jesus becomes the subject, they're both in the genitive form, Jesus and gegenmenu, was in Bethany. And it's taken adverbial, while Jesus was, in the house of Simon the leper, a woman came to him. And so then it jumps to the main subject, a woman came to him. And so there's a contrast here between Jesus and the woman. And now for the vocabulary of chapter 21. The first word is anoigo, and it means I open. The second word is
baptizo,
and it means I baptize. The third word is
euangelion,
and it means the gospel or good news. The fourth word is martyreo, and it means eyewitness. The fifth word is pempo, and it means I send. The sixth word is
poneros a on,
and it means evil or bad. The seventh word is
prosopon,
and it means face. The eighth word is
semeon,
and it means sign or miracle. The ninth word is
stoma,
and it means mouth. And the tenth word is hupago, and it means I go away.